The Lighthouse. Read. The first light of dawn haloed Father Achille in the sanctuary doors. He waited as I roused the others. No one had slept well. Bags swelled beneath Celie's eyes, though she did her best to pinch color into her pale cheeks. Coco yawned while Beau groaned and cracked his neck. My own ached, despite loose fingers kneading the knotted muscles there. I shrugged away from her touch with an apologetic smile, motioning toward the door.
"The villagers won't rouse for another hour or so," Achille said, handing each of us an apple as we filed past. "Remember what I said. Don't let them see you. The chasseurs have an outpost not far from here. You don't want anyone following you to wherever it is you're going." "Thank you, Father." I tucked the apple into my pocket. It wasn't shiny, it wasn't red, but it was more than he owed us, more than others would have given. "For everything." He eyed me steadily. "Don't mention it." When I nodded, moving to lead the others through the churchyard, he caught my arm. "Be careful. Kushmars are heralded as harbingers of doom." I lifted an incredulous brow, and he added, grudging, "They're only seen before catastrophic events." "A mob isn't a catastrophic event."
"Never underestimate the power of a mob."
Beau draped his arm casually across Coco's shoulders as they waited, leaning against a tree. Mist clung to the edges of their hoods.
"People are capable of unspeakable evil en masse. I've seen it happen."
Father Achille released my arm and stepped away.
"As have I. Take care."
Without another word, he disappeared into the foyer, closing the door firmly behind him. A strange sensation twinged my chest as I watched him go.
"I wonder if we'll ever see him again."
"Not likely," Lou said. The thick mist nearly engulfed her slight frame. Behind her, a white shape slipped through a break in the haze, and amber eyes flashed. I scowled. The dog had returned. She hadn't noticed, instead extending her arm down the hillside. "Shall we?" The village of Fitumb had been named for its sea stacks of hematite. Black, sparkling, the rocks rose from the sea for miles on end in the disjointed shapes of fairy wings, some tall and thin with spider-like webs of silver, others short and stout with veins of red. Even the smallest stacks towered over the sea like great immortal beings. Waves crashed around the wreckage of ships below. From our path along the bluff, the broken masts and booms looked like teeth. Celie shivered in the icy breeze, wincing as her foot caught and twisted between two rocks. Beau cast her a sympathetic look.
"It isn't too late to turn back, you know."
"No." She lifted her chin stubbornly before wrenching her foot free. More rocks skittered from the path and tumbled into the sea below. "We need my carriage."
"Your father's carriage?"
Coco muttered. She kept one hand on the sheer cliff face to her left, the other clenched tightly around Le Petit Laume, and edged past. Beau followed carefully, picking his way through the uneven terrain as the path narrowed and spiraled upward. At the back of the group, I kept my own hand fisted in the fabric of Lou's cloak. I needn't have bothered. She moved with the grace of a cat, never slipping, never stumbling, each step light and nimble. Color rose high on Celie's cheeks as she tried to maintain our pace. Her breathing grew labored. When she stumbled again, I leaned around Lou and murmured,
"Beau is right, Celie. You can wait in the chapel while we deal with the Kushmar. We'll return for you before we leave."
"I am not..." She seethed, skirt and hair whipping wildly in the wind, "waiting in the chapel." Sweeping past Celie, Lou patted her on the head. "Of course you aren't, kitten." Then she cast a sidelong look down her right shoulder to where the sea crashed below. "You needn't be worried anyway. Kittens have 9 lives." Her teeth flashed. "Don't they?" My hand tightened on her cloak, and I tugged her backward, bending low to her ear.
"Stop it."
Stop what, darling? She craned her neck to look at me, eyes wide, innocent, her lashes fluttered. I'm encouraging her.
You're terrifying her.
She reached back to trace my lips with her pointer finger. Perhaps you don't give her enough credit. With that, she twisted from my grip and strode past Celie without another look. We watched her go with varying degrees of alarm. When she vanished around the bend after Coco and Beau, Celie's shoulders relaxed infinitesimally. She took a deep breath. She still doesn't like me. I thought she might, after...
Do you like her?
A second too late, she wrinkled her nose. Of course not! I jerked my chin to indicate we should continue.
Then there isn't a problem.
She said nothing for a long moment. But why doesn't she like me?
Careful. I moved to steady her when she tripped, but she jerked away, overcompensating and falling hard against the cliff. I fought an eye roll. She knows we have history, plus, I cleared my throat pointedly, she heard you call her a whore.
Now she whipped around to face me. She what? I shrugged and kept walking.
At the St. Nicholas Day celebrations, she overheard our discussion. I think she took it well, all things considered. She could have murdered us on the spot.
She heard me?
Eyes widening with palpable distress, she lifted a hand to her lips.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no.
I couldn't resist this time. My eyes rolled to the heavens. I'm sure she's been called worse.
She's a witch, Celie hissed, hand dropping to clutch her chest. She could curse me, or
I could.
The smile that carved my lips felt harder than usual, like it had been hewn from granite. Even after Lou had risked life and limb to save her in the catacombs, Celie still considered her an enemy. Of course she did.
Why did you follow us, Celie, if you disdain us so?
At her expression, I shook my head with a self-deprecating laugh, a brittle one. Hers wasn't an unprecedented reaction. If Coco hadn't set the tunnels ablaze, would the denizens of La Mascarade de Clan have returned for us? Would they have brought fire of their own? Yes, they would have, and I couldn't blame them. I'd have once done the same.
Forget it.
No, Reed, wait, I didn't mean... Though she didn't touch me, something in her voice made me pause. Made me turn. Jean-Luc told me what happened. He told me about you. I am so sorry.
I'm not.
Her brows lifted, puckered. You're not?
I'm not.
When I didn't elaborate, her frown deepened. She blinked rapidly. Oh, of course. I... Blowing air from her cheeks, she planted an abrupt hand on her hip, and her eyes sparked again with that unfamiliar temper. Well, I'm not either. Sorry, that is, that you're different, that I'm different. I'm not sorry at all. Though she'd spoken in frankness rather than spite, her words still should have hurt. They didn't. Instead, the nervous energy thrumming just beneath my skin seemed to settle, replaced by peculiar warmth. Perhaps peace, perhaps closure. She had Jean-Luc now, and I had Lou. Everything between us had changed, and that
was okay. That was good.
When I smiled this time, it was genuine.
We're friends, Celie. We'll always be friends.
Well then, she sniffed, straightening and fighting her own smile. As your friend, it is my duty to inform you that your hair is in dire need of a cut and that your coat is missing two buttons. Also, you have a hickey on your throat. When my hand shot upward to the tender skin near my pulse, she laughed and strode around me, pert nose in the air. You should cover it, for propriety's sake.
There she was.
Chuckling, I fell into step beside her. It felt nice, familiar. After another moment of comfortable silence, she asked, What will we do after we warn the cauchemar? The peace I'd felt fractured, as did my smile.
We journey to the chateau.
Her hand fluttered to her collar once more, a nervous habit, a telling one. And And then what? Just how do we plan to defeat Morgaine?
Watch where you're going.
I nodded to a dip in the path. Sure enough, she stumbled slightly. I didn't reach for her this time, and she caught herself without my help.
Lou wants to burn the castle to the ground.
The dead weight returned to my chest, to my voice.
And everyone in it.
How will she do that?
I shrugged. How does a witch do anything?
How does it work, then? The magic. Her expression took on a shyer quality, her chin ducking quickly to her chest. She turned to face forward once more. I've always been curious.
You have?
Oh, don't play coy, Reed. I know you were curious, too. She paused delicately. Before?
Before. Such a simple word.
I kept my gaze impassive.
It's a give and take. For Lou to raise the chateau, she'll have to destroy something of equal value to herself.
Celie's voice held wonder. And what might that be?
I don't know.
The admission chafed. Lou had provided no details, no strategy. When we'd pressed her, she'd simply smiled and asked, "Are you afraid?" Beau had responded immediately with a resounding yes. I'd privately agreed. The entire plan, or lack thereof, made me uneasy. Like God had plucked him from my thoughts, my brother's shout rent the air. Celie and I looked up in unison to see part of the cliff give way. Rocks rained down upon us, striking first my shoulders, my arms, then my head. Sharp pain exploded, and stars burst in my vision. Reacting instinctively, I thrust Celie out of harm's way, and Beau, he... Horror unfurled in my gut like a deadly snake. As if in slow motion, I watched as he lost his footing, as he flailed wildly through the air, as he tried and failed to find purchase among the falling rocks. There was nothing I could do, no way I could help. Lunging forward anyway, I gauged the distance between us, desperate to catch some part of him before he plunged to the sea. Coco's hand shot through the rockfall and seized his wrist. With another shout, Beau swung in her grip like a pendulum. He thrust his free hand upward to grip the edge of the rock, and together the two struggled to drag him back onto the path. I raced ahead to help, my heart pounding a deafening beat. Adrenaline, complete unadulterated fear, coursed through my system, lengthening my stride and shortening my breath. By the time I reached them, however, they lay sprawled in a tangled heap. Their chests rose and fell haphazardly as they too tried to catch their breath. Above us, Lou stood at the top of the bluff. She gazed down with a hint of a smile, just the slightest curve of her lips. The white dog growled and disappeared behind her.
"You should really be more careful," she said softly, before turning away.
Beau glared at her in disbelief, but didn't respond. Sitting up, he wiped a shaky hand across his brow and glanced at his arm, his mouth twisted in an ugly slash. "God damn it! I tore my fucking sleeve!" I shook my head, cursing bitterly under my breath. His sleeve. He nearly plunged to his death, and all he cared about was his fucking sleeve. With a convulsive, full-body shudder, I opened my mouth to tell him just what he could do with said sleeve, but an odd choking noise escaped Coco. I stared at her in alarm, then incredulity. She wasn't choking at all. She was laughing. Without a word, her shoulders still shaking, she reached out to tear the fabric of his opposite sleeve. His mouth fell open in outrage as he tried to pull away. "Excuse you, my mother bought me this shirt."
"Now you match," she clutched his arms and laughed harder. "Your mother will approve when she sees you, if she ever sees you again, that is. You did almost die," she slapped his chest as if the two had shared a hilarious joke. "You almost died!"
"Yes."
Beau searched her face warily.
"You mentioned that."
"I can mend your shirt, if you'd like," Celie offered. "I've a needle and thread in my bag." but she broke off when Coco continued to laugh wildly. When that laughter deepened into something darker, crazed, Bo pulled her into his arms without hesitation. Her shoulders shook now for an entirely different reason, and she buried her face in the crook of his neck, sobbing incoherently. One of his arms wrapped around her waist, the other across her back, and he held her tightly, fiercely, murmuring soft words in her ear. Words I couldn't hear, words I didn't want to hear. I looked away. This pain wasn't for me, this vulnerability. I felt like an interloper, watching them together, the way Bo rocked her gently, the way she clutched him for dear life. It brought a lump to my throat. Anyone could see where this was headed. Coco and Bo had danced around each other for months. Just as clear, however, was the inevitable heartbreak. Neither was in a position to start a relationship. They shared too much hurt between them, too much grief, jealousy, spite. Even well-adjusted, the two would have been wrong for each other, like water and oil. I glanced up at Lou. We'd been wrong for each other, too. And so right. With a sigh, I started up the path, my footsteps heavy, my thoughts heavier. Celie followed quietly behind. When we reached Lou, I laced her cold fingers through mine, and we turned to face the lighthouse. Bo and Coco joined us several minutes later. Though her eyes remained swollen and red, she no longer cried. Instead, she held her shoulders straight, proud. Riddled with holes, Bo's shirt still smoked slightly, revealing more skin than prudent in January. They didn't speak of what had transpired, and neither did we. We studied the lighthouse in silence. It rose from the earth like a crooked finger, beckoning to the sky. A single stone tower, dirty, dilapidated, dark against the dawn. No flames flickered in the basin beneath the slanted roof.
"The stable boy said no one lights the torches anymore," Celie said, her voice low.
I didn't ask why she whispered. The hair on my neck had lifted inexplicably. The shadows here seemed to collect thicker than natural.
"He said they haven't been lit for years."
"The stable boy talks a lot."
Bo glanced between us nervously. He kept his arm firm around Coco's waist.
Has anyone actually seen a Koshmar?"
"I told you," Celie said. "It was a great hulking beast of tooth and claw, and it—"
"Darling, no."
Bo lifted his free hand with a forced smile.
"I meant—"
He struggled for the right words for a moment before shrugging.
"Has anyone else seen a Koshmar? Preferably someone who didn't run away screaming."
Coco flashed him a grin, amused. It seemed out of place on her grim face. With a start, I realized I couldn't remember the last time she genuinely smiled. Had she ever? Had I seen it? When she pinched his ribs, he yelped and dropped his arm.
"You have a beautiful falsetto yourself," she said. "I'd almost forgotten."
Though she grinned wider at his outrage, his surprise, her bravado felt fragile, delicate. I didn't want to see it break. Buffeting Bo's shoulder, I said,
"Do you remember the witch on Motranit?"
His mouth flattened. "We do not speak of her."
"I remember."
Coco shot me an appreciative look. It was there and gone in the blink of an eye, so brief I might have imagined it.
"She quite liked your little performance, didn't she?"
"I'm an excellent singer,"
Bo sniffed.
"You're an excellent dancer."
I laughed despite myself.
"I remember Bo running away screaming that night."
"What is this?" He looked between us, brows and nose wrinkling in alarm.
"What's happening here?"
"She told you what a Koshmar looks like."
Though Coco didn't look at Celie, didn't acknowledge her existence whatsoever, I suspected her admission was the only apology Celie would receive.
"Don't be an ass. Listen."
With a long-suffering sigh, Bo inclined his head in Celie's direction. She stood a little straighter.
My apologies, madame,
he muttered, sounding like a peevish child.
What I meant was, has anyone ever fought a Koshmar? Some actual experience might be the difference between surviving this encounter intact and having our heads thrown to sea.
Is that your fear? Lou tilted her own head to study him. She'd grown unusually silent since reaching the lighthouse. Unusually still. Until now, her eyes hadn't wavered from the thick shadows at the base of the tower. Decapitation! His frown matched her own.
Well, it doesn't seem particularly pleasant, no.
But do you fear it? She pressed. Does it haunt your dreams?
Bo scoffed at the peculiar question, not bothering to hide his exasperation. Show me someone who doesn't fear decapitation, and I'll show you a liar.
Why? Coco's eyes narrowed. What is it, Lou?
Lou's gaze returned to the shadows. She stared at them, as if trying to decipher something, as if listening to an unspoken language.
A cauchemar is a nightmare, she explained in an offhand voice, still distracted. It'll appear differently to each of us, assuming the form of our greatest fears.
A beat of horrific silence passed as her words sank in. Our greatest fears. An uncanny awareness skittered down my spine, as if even now the creature watched us, learned us. I didn't even know my greatest fear. I'd never given it thought, never given it voice. It seemed the cauchemar would do it for me.
Have you fought one? Coco asked Lou. A cauchemar.
A sly grin crept across Lou's face. Still, she studied the shadows.
Once. A long time ago.
What shape did it take?
Bo demanded. Her eyes snapped to his.
That's very personal, Beauregard. What shape will it take for you?
When she stepped toward him, he took a hasty step back.
Not decapitation, not drowning either.
She cocked her head and stalked closer, circling him now. She didn't grin, didn't mock.
No, your fear isn't quite so vital, is it? You fear something else, something peripheral.
When she inhaled deeply, her eyes lighting with recognition, I seized her hand and yanked her to my side.
This isn't the time or place, I said tersely. We need to focus.
By all means, Jazz, she waved to the rotten door. Lead the way.
We all stared at it. No one moved. I peered behind us to the village, to the dozens of pinpricks of light. The sun had risen. The townspeople had gathered. They'd start their trek soon. We had half an hour, maybe a quarter more, before they ascended on us, on the unwitting monster inside.
You should stay out of it, boy. This isn't your fight.
I squared my shoulders. With a deep breath, I moved to open the door, but Saley beat me to it. Her hand seemed paler and smaller than usual against the dark wood, but she didn't hesitate. She pushed with all her might, once, twice, three times, until the hinges finally swung open with a shriek. The sound pierced the early morning silence, frightening a pair of seagulls from the rafters. Bo cursed and jumped. So did Lou. With one last deep breath, I stepped inside.